Hey everybody, happy Sunday night. Welcome to Movie Watchers Discussion Group. Hey, I hope you all got a chance to watch the movie. And even if you didn't get a chance to watch it for tonight's discussion, it's been around a while. Perhaps you've seen it before and can join in the discussion anyway. I thought it would be fun to start with a song that appeared at the beginning of the movie. You may or may not realize you heard this song in the movie, but it's a fun song. It's called Let the Mystery Be. Here we go.
Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worried about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, and so it's all the same to me. Think out, Jesse, let the mystery be. Some say once you're gone forever. Some say you're gonna come back.
Let the mystery be. That was fun. That was playing on the car radio as the Yogis were in Seattle. So anyway, fun song. So we did do a play sheet, and hopefully you felt it was helpful in guiding you through the movie, or at least guiding you into writing your thoughts down after the movie. And we can go through the play sheet, which I intend to do, but let me be clear that anytime you want to take the mic and say everything you know about the movie, feel free to do that. You don't have to wait for the questions. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. You don't have to wait. So I'm really excited to hear what you guys have to say about the movie. Having said that, the first question on the play sheet is, if you were to rename this movie, what name would you give it? Dun 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 Good. Important and not important. Nice, Rena. Yeah. Yes. Both were in the movie. Absolutely. Who dies? Oh, good, Helen. Nice. Ron, the question is, if you were to rename this movie, what name would you give it? Regina has said important and not important. Helen says, who dies? Ron says, the middle way. Very good. Yes. I said, finding peace. Yeah. Good. All right. All right, and Jay, kid decides to become enlightened. Very nice, very nice. and let me say that we did watch the movie again this month. We watched it, I don't know, a couple years ago, but we watched it again this month at Regina's behest. Because she felt like it was reflective of what we're covering in Gentle Healing in our reading of Revelation. Regina, feel free to, again, just like everybody else, take the mic and speak at length at my behest. It's kind of like a request, maybe a little stronger. I think I don't know what the actual definition is, but at Regina's plea, we watched the movie. But yeah, so any of the themes that we miss, I'm sure you'll do clean up for us there and let us know what it was that we missed. So question number two. Is what did the movie reveal about treatment of the physical body? I'll tell you, I'm actually eating. It's hard to eat and facilitate at the same time, but I worked on this bankruptcy petition all day long. I haven't moved out of this chair, so I finally got some food in my mouth. So apologies. Regina, please take the mic and answer. What did the movie reveal about treatment of the physical body or any other question you want to answer?
Well, that's funny because I am also in the kitchen making myself a sandwich because I'm starved, because I worked all day today on the Retreat House web pages. And as I said during my teaching, I worked all the way up until Kate let go of the mic, and then I thought, oh no, I gotta quit working and get ready to teach. So I'm starved. And what's funny is that you're hungry and eating, and I'm hungry and preparing something to eat. And that has a lot to do with the question, right? The question that you asked is, what did the movie reveal about the treatment of the physical body? And I think what it revealed is that if the body's not taken care of, it can get in the way of I'm going to call it your concentration. It can get in the way of your concentration. It can get in the way of your ability to really focus on awareness. It can get in the way of your ability to contemplate, have insight. You know, that it's really helpful to have a body that's well taken care of. You know, right now I'm hungry. And so, you know, although I am answering the question, you know, if you really ask me, Regina, what do you want to do in the next 5 minutes? It's eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Then I can focus on movie watcher group, right? Same thing with you, Jacqueline. You want to eat whatever you're eating. Then you can focus on leading the movie watcher group. You know, that body can get in the way of our oh, chicken pot pie. Okay, Jacqueline wants a chicken pot pie, and I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And then we can really give our attention fully to this group. And that's the same, you know, if we're hungry, if we're weak, you know, if we haven't been taking care of the body and it's sick, it gets in the way of our concentration. It gets in the way of our ability to focus on even our spiritual purpose, even though our spiritual purpose is so important to us. So that's what the movie revealed about the treatment of the physical body, at least in my humble opinion. And I'm going to release the mic because my toast just popped up And I need to actually make peanut butter. I make it out of PB Fit so I can put it on that toast. So, releasing the mic.
That's great. I'm gonna let go because my toast just popped up. That's awesome. No, Gina, I think you make a really good point, and it's a point that we hear made all the time, frankly, by the spiritual teachers, who, when I was looking at that Metta Sutta meditation, loving kindness meditation, for this morning's talk. There was a discussion of that in the instructions. If you're you don't need to sit up really straight with an erect posture and all that, because the body, if it's uncomfortable, can be distracting. I think Adi Shanti makes that point in True Meditation. And it seems like there was another one, but it just flew right out of my head. Thanks, Jay, for they did the forum meeting without me. Thanks, Jay. Wow, 2.5 hours. Good for you. Yes, please feed that body. Have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich as well. But yeah, it's gosh, I don't know who else made that point, but it's certainly certainly well made, and the movie makes the point as well. If you don't take care of the physical body, it can become a distraction. The next question is, according to the movie, what sparked Siddhartha's interest in seeking enlightenment? And how is that relevant to your own awakening? So Siddhartha's living in the, Siddhartha is living in this castle. He's got everything his heart could possibly desire, and yes, that's it, Shauna. Absolutely, yeah. He saw suffering for the first time. Yeah, although his dad, the king, tried to protect him from that. Yeah, he saw suffering and went, "What the heck?" Ron, I don't know. Ron's asking how to take the mic. I don't know what version you're on. Ken, do you want to walk Ron through taking the mic? You're busy. Do you mind? He's on a mic. Oh, well, that might be Regina who needs to tell you how to take the mic. Take the mic. Regina, I don't know where you are in your PB&J. Oh, there you go. Helen's answering the question about being on a Mac. She's also on a Mac, so she is going to instruct him. I will say that while they're working on Ron taking the mic, okay, yeah. Good. While they're doing that, I will note that Helen said it was his compassion. Yeah, the counterpoint to him seeing suffering, and it was his compassion that moved him to embark on the path of enlightenment. And Sassy, excuse me, Shauna says, as answering the second part of the question. How, according to the movie, what sparked his interest in seeking enlightenment, and how is that relevant to your own awakening? And Shauna has stated that it's relevant to my practice because I am learning to not believe in the suffering or the personal self. Okay, Ron, I'm going to let go of the mic and take it away.
Can you hear me? The way I found this parallel to my own experience was his curiosity was piqued. He was introduced to something that he didn't understand or was not aware of, and he decided to search, to investigate. And I think the second thing was he was open to what he saw not being defined by his father or his surroundings. He was open to furthering that search without barriers or impediments. So that's because my journey was somewhat that way too. When I first found spirituality, it was something that was new to me. I was very intriguing. So just followed that path. Dropping the mic.
Very cool. Thank you, Ron. Yeah, for sharing. Thank you. Okay. So as an extension, actually, of that question even, question four, how does Siddharth, I don't know why I can't say that name, I can spell it, how does Siddhartha's journey in the movie parallel your own experience of the spiritual path? And you know, I took the liberty of assuming that you saw some parallels there. Ron just told us a little bit about that. Sean has shared a parallel regarding beginning the path. But did you see other ways in which Siddhartha's journey parallels your own experience of the spiritual path? Regina, please take the mic.
Yeah, that was an interesting question for me, Jacqueline, because I really never thought about how my spiritual path, his spiritual path, paralleled each other. You know, I always just thought of him as the model, right? So I had to really back up and look at that. And what I saw then was, first of all, one thing that we both had in common was a calling. You know, for him, you know, he was raised inside the palace walls where everything was perfect. And then one day he heard this woman playing this haunting song. And he asked what the song was about. And his wife told him it was about the land where she came from, the mountains and the rivers, and how beautiful it was. And that just really, in him, he just became very aware of this desire to go outside the walls, you know. And his wife told him there's nothing but suffering out there. And like, that didn't matter. He had to go outside the walls. It was just like this calling. And I would say I also experienced that. I experienced this calling. I mean, it didn't matter if I had, you know, it really didn't matter if it ruined my life. You know, I had a pretty good life, like he had a pretty good life. You know, I had a good job and plenty of money and a nice house, and my daughter went to a great school, and it didn't really matter if I was going to go outside those palace walls and it ruined everything. I had to go outside those palace walls. I had to find out what was outside of that perfect life I built for myself. So that I saw is something that we had in common. Another thing is the universe assisted him, you know. You know, for example, when he did go outside the palace walls and he was in the parade, and his father had set it up so he would only see the young and the beautiful and the healthy, but two old men happened to get within his sight, and that tugged at his calling and made him go and look. You know, the universe assisted him. Also, there was the time when, of course, this part is probably myth, but symbolically, there was the time when he was meditating and it was about to rain, and the big cobra came and stood over him so that he wouldn't be distracted by the rain. To me, that was symbolic of the fact that the universe assisted him. And the universe has always assisted me in different ways. Like, without the universe assisting and helping, without the spontaneous things that happened, the miraculous things that happened, I couldn't have walked this path, right? So there was first my calling. And then there's the universe's assistance. And then what really motivated him, which was called compassion, is traditionally called compassion, but it's that desire that he had to awaken for everybody. This wasn't a selfish calling in him. It was a desire to do this because it was the way to be most helpful for everyone. And that's always been a big motivator for me too, the primary motivator, that it's the greatest service I can render is my own self-realization, as Ramana Maharshi would say. Another thing that he did that I've also done is trusting my own insights. You know, for example, when he had the insight of the middle way, he trusted it. And immediately he changed. And even when his previous followers came and said, you know, what are you doing? You're abandoning your vows. He said, you know, to learn is to change. But he was trusting an insight that came within him so much that he completely changed his path. And I've always done that as well. I've always trusted my own insights. And then the last thing, which I still need to perfect, but the last thing is watching perception, thoughts, and feelings without believing them, which of course is exactly what he did in the awakening scene. But there have been so many times in my life when things seemed very, very fearful, and I learned to just watch my thoughts, my perceptions, my feelings without believing them. You know, I've nicknamed that rest, accept, and trust. But that's something else we had in common. So those were the five things that I saw, and thank you for asking me to look at that. Oh, by the way, there was one more little thing. After he discovered the middle way, he said, if I can reach enlightenment, let this bowl float upriver, and it did. I actually did that once, not with the bowl floating upriver, but I had a tree in my backyard that was appeared dead. It was ruined by a very early freeze. And in fact, trees in Pueblo West died, including this tree in my backyard. And I one day said, I looked at the tree and said, if I can reach enlightenment, bring that tree back to life. And lo and behold, it was a couple months later. It didn't happen immediately like his bowl, but branches started growing out of the trunk of the tree. And we ended up trimming off all of the dead limbs, and the tree came back. So wow, letting go.
Well, that's awesome, Regina. Thank you for sharing your answer to that question. I think it must have been written for you. That was an unusual way to ask the question, but that's the way it came in. I have repeated on the board what a summary of what I think you said, but it was quite a list. Thank you for sharing it. calling compassion, being assisted by the universe, trusting your own insights, and watching perception, thoughts, and feelings without believing them. Yeah, Jay, please take the mic.
So my path is similar to path of Siddhartha Buddha from the movie. Was also something Regina mentioned that has always been deep in my heart, which has to do with all of humanity as I think of it, which I now think of as one mind, you know, as we're feeding our practice this, you know, our collective practice into the one mind, that I always wanted for all of humanity to awaken. I always had a sort of big motivation for that, like a dreamer, idealist kind of person. It was never just, even though I've certainly discovered many little selfish elements to my own mind that I've, you know, certainly become aware of in my process of purification. But outside of that, though, there's always been, a deep motivation that's for everyone, a grand vision, you know, that's motivated me a lot. And I think without that sort of grand vision, if I just didn't give a crap about other people, you know, I wouldn't have taught for so many years like I have and done all the things that I did. I care deeply about, and I need to admit to that and talk about it, because I do. I care deeply about everyone waking up. And there's some other elements of like how he kind of went off on an extreme tangent, and he had the whole, you know, experience on the river next to those ascetic guys that, you know, the plucking of the string and it broke, and, you know, the middle way. That, you know, I certainly kind of went out at different points in my journey on sort of extreme little bents, you know, and maybe a lot of us have, but, you know, realizing that the spiritual life is not, you know, separate from just regular life. That's something that actually Sonia and I were talking about today. You know, I kind of mentioned it too in my little half hour fellowship about, you know, there's no segmentation. It's, you know, it's all, it's just your life. You know, it's your consciousness. It's not, you know, so I kind of look at the middle way as, you know, in a sense, I guess this tangent is trying to compartmentalize in some kind of way, you know, create some special thing you got to do to become awakened. You know, so, and I guess in that sense, the same as his path. So giving up the mic.
Pretty good. Thank you, Jay. Thanks for sharing. Ron had a comment. He wanted to show how to defeat death. He felt he could find the answer. Jay intimated this. This next question, which is, what is meant by the middle way? The middle way, and how did Siddhartha come to understand this way as the path to enlightenment? Helen, please take the mic.
Thank you. I kind of saw it as like a non-efforting. So when he was, you know, there starving himself and, you know, not having any water, it's such an effort. And what struck me about that, and I was thinking about the relation to my own path, is this efforting seems to come with thought of what, like, needs to be done. And I was thinking about how he, like, oh, I want to be enlightened. Here are a bunch of ascetics, and this seems like the thing you do to get enlightened. And then before you know it, 6 years of your life have gone by. And you're like, oh, I just had this thought about what needed to be done. And so I felt like when he understood the middle way, it was like what he was understanding was an emptiness. It wasn't full of this or full of that. There wasn't a doing or an efforting. It was actually just a being, and then an allowing. So I only just watched it and like finished 10 minutes or so before we got together. So I think there's a lot that's gonna, I'll contemplate over the next, you know, or marinating in it. But it's kind of where I saw him going with that. This like just being and not doing. Thank you.
Yeah, lovely, Helen. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting. This is obviously a message I need to hear, because I heard myself saying it this morning. I heard Regina talking about that in her teaching in the last hour, and I'm hearing you remind us of that same theme again. So thank you for sharing it. Let's see. Of course, Jay, Ron writes, efforting helps create contrast, progress by process of elimination. And there was a scene in the movie, And the particular quote that brought this home and is associated with this idea of Siddhartha finding the middle way. Let's see, I'm looking on the IMDb site for the quote. It says, Lama Norbu said, "One day Siddhartha heard an old musician on a passing boat speaking to his people. If you tighten the string too much, it will snap, and if you leave it too slack, it won't play." Suddenly Siddhartha realized that these simple words held the great truth, and that in all these years he had been following the wrong path. So, yeah. Certainly preferred Helen's description of that. So the next question here is, who or what was Mara, and who were his five daughters? How does this relate to your understanding of what might be required on the spiritual path? Yeah. By the way, Ron says, my experience of working at it brought me to the understanding less is more. Absolutely. Yeah, like Siddhartha, Helen says. So how about it? Mara and Mara's five daughters. What do these represent? And what does it say about what might be required on the spiritual path? Regina's written, Mara is illusion. And Jay wrote, taste, smell, touch, hearing. Helen wrote, insight, and Helen wrote, fear, greed, ignorance, desire, and pride. And let's see. Traditionally, Mara's five daughters are, I bet you wrote that down, Helen, as you just watched the movie. I had written it somewhere and could not find the piece of paper where where I wrote it. Good. Fear, greed, ignorance, desire, and pride. Very good, very good. Regina, please take the mic.
Oops, you said that too fast. My mouth still full. I thought I'd get to chew after I clicked on the mic. Hold on. All right. Helen's exactly right. It was fear, greed, ignorance, desire, and pride. Those were the five daughters of Mara. But what was really interesting to me about that was the movie said that Mara sent the five daughters to tempt Siddhartha away from his search. You know, so I haven't sat down and done this yet, but I kind of make, because I actually just watched the movie this afternoon while I was working on the web pages. So what it really occurred to me this afternoon when I was watching the movie is that I need to really contemplate each of these individually, fear, greed, ignorance, desire, pride, and how, in my case, they attempt to tempt me away from my search. Yeah, you know, so where, how does greed affect this Regina personality in order to get her eyes off of purpose, you know, and how does ignorance and desire and pride and fear, I mean, very, very specific to me, you know, like I really felt like it would be worthwhile to look at it, because anything that we don't see does distract us away from our search, right? And so really taking the time to contemplate each of these individually and see how they play out in my experience, I thought would be really insightful, and I'm excited to do that when I get that opportunity, maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, that's great, Regina. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you, Helen, for sharing. And Jay, thanks for playing. I appreciate I just appreciate, Regina, you're taking every opportunity to practice and to practice with these five desires. And how they might hinder your search. Let's see. Jay says, Helen, Jacqueline, what are your thoughts on ignorance? I think you know, Jay, that Regina has discussed this concept of ignorance with us off and on. I guess I'd have to say that it's the absence of truth, right? Being ignorant of the truth would be the way I think that I would define that. It doesn't mean being stupid, right? It's being and in fact, when I couldn't remember the daughter's five names and I couldn't remember where I put the paper where I'd written that down, I actually looked it up. I looked up Mara on Wikipedia, and they talked about the five temptations being attraction or thirst, aversion, delusion, pride, and fear. And, you know, this delusion and ignorance, I think, are the same thing. You know, it's believing the illusion as opposed to believing the truth, to knowing and believing the truth, right? So, yeah. Attraction, aversion, delusion, pride, and fear, yeah. That's what Ron says as well. So, yeah, so I think delusion is the same thing as ignorance. And so the second half of that question, how does this relate to your understanding of what might be required on the spiritual path? I think Regina, what Regina is talking about doing is just fabulous, you know. And I have no doubt she's going to sit down and do that too. Really look at how these things impede us on the path, impede our search. And, you know, we talked about some of those this morning. Regina talked about some of those, or at least talked about them collectively a moment ago. It's all the things that are in the way of recalling our truth, resting in our truth. Jay, please take the mic.
Well, I just wanted to, I know this isn't a result of, I think, necessarily deeper contemplation, but I do want to just get my mind and share some thoughts I have for myself as to how I think these five areas are impeding me in spiritual growth right now, just from this conversation. Fear, sometimes I can fear hurt. Or I fear conflict sometimes. I fear, I don't fear a lot of the things I used to. Sometimes I fear poverty, but I'm starting to change my attitude about poverty after contemplating Francis so much. Greed, I must have it all. No, the greed is maybe come into play sometimes in my business, maybe with money to some degree, but that I wouldn't say is something particularly consistent. I mostly didn't really care about money most of my life. I mean, maybe at different points over the last maybe 8 or 9 years, maybe I felt like because I lost so much in the stock market that I needed to be get as much money as I could to make up for it. And maybe I got a little greedy at times, but I don't really have a big greed issue. Ignorance, I think that comes up in me every time I'm distracted in emotional reactions or indulge in some fantasy from a reaction or something like that. Like I instead of just moving through it and returning to my peace and my truth, I go into Maya and will let the mind engage. But again, that's really at an all-time low, and I don't really tolerate that much anymore. The desire, I mean, I still want awakening. To me, I think the healthy use of desire is to want, you know, awakening more than anything. So there, you know, desire means of God, if you look up the word in the Latin roots of the whole thing. So I guess I think of it as, you know, what would limit me on the path is desire for physical stuff, which I think is at an all-time low for me. Maybe some desire for relationships still comes up some. Pride, you know, I have taken a lot of pride in knowledge, intellectual knowledge that I've gained, and I think that has probably been one of the most major hindrances in my path throughout my time. And I'm learning to let that go. And, you know, I know less every day, you know, letting myself be the beginner, you know, and, you know, let the knowledge go and just be, rather than thinking I've got to say things that sound, you know, or quote books or, you know, just all of this sort of pride in the smartness and this, you know, skills or talents or whatever I think I've developed or learned, you know, I've definitely had pride in that. So for sure, pride in, you know, whatever, you know, intellectual knowledge I've gained, and maybe some fear, the two out of the five I'd say that are maybe still lingering a bit more, so giving up my...
Cool. Thank you, Jay. Thanks for sharing that live contemplation. That was great. Wonderful. Welcome, Craig. The next question we were going to look at was, what was Mara's last attack in the movie? And I gave you a hint. Who or what is the architect? Yeah. Jay says, the image of himself. Ron says, ego. Helen said, the belief in the person. Yeah. well, and, yeah, so we've all said the same things, right? And I defined it as love of self or self-will. So I think that's a good thing to for us to contemplate too, right? This is, Regina's been talking to us quite a bit about this lately, about the final death of the ego. And so it was interesting to see that come up as the last battle of Mara there in the movie. Helen, please take the mic. Hey, Helen, I'm sorry. I hope I hope you weren't talking into the void. I don't think you had the mic. I'll let go again.
It was amazing. You all missed it. I'm just saying, I love this idea of taking those five Mara's daughters and contemplating on them, and I sort of wrote down that I would do that, kind of knowing that I may never do that, but now I feel inspired to do that. And Regina said she's going to do it. But on this point, like I felt like if even just like briefly contemplating, if you dig down into each of them, you find really what underlies them is this belief in a person, as you, as this person, like you just said, self. So anyway, I was just kind of I just wanted to kind of share that underneath all of those things really is just this one solid belief in the self, which I think well, we know, but that was it. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Helen, for sharing. Regina, please take the mic.
Yeah, and I agree with every one of you here. You know, what I want to comment on is just before that idea that, you know, I am you, right? And the way he said it was, I am your house and you live in me. But it's that idea that I am you, you know, kind of like in, what was it, Peaceful Warrior? Do you know who you are without me, right? Or yeah, also Revolver, the same thing, yeah. So, but, just before that, what Mara said to Siddhartha was, you who go where no one else will dare, will you be my God, right? And that really reminded me of something that we've seen recently in NTI Revelation, which was called Lord of Lords. And what it said was that when you really focus on the desire for awakening, and you're letting go of all other desires and you're focusing on just that, that the ego catches on to that. And it realizes that the only way now it can tempt you away from your search is to make you think you've achieved it, right? You are enlightened. And that's really, and it says that's the, it says that that's the last temptation because it's the only one that still has a chance at working. And that's really what we saw Mara do just before he basically did the I am you argument. He said, you who go where no one else will dare, you know, you're beyond everyone else, right? You're, it's like you're awake, you're far beyond everyone else. Will you be my God? So he was tempting him with the Lord of Lords temptation, which of course Siddhartha did not. Thanks.
Yeah, good catch. Thank you, Regina. Good insight there. Jay made a joke about the Matrix. I also thought it was interesting that that this ego character was called the architect in this movie as well. Made me think a little bit more about the Matrix movie and the implications in that movie about this, you know, this creation of the self. Shauna says, and Jesus being tempted by the devil to lord over the earth. Yeah, that being the same thing. This, yeah, it's going to get you at the last stage that it can. Yeah. All right, awesome. And then I have a question that I asked out of curiosity. And that is, did you find the story within the story, that is the search for the reincarnation of Lama Dorje, helpful, or did that story within the story seem like a distraction to you? You know, when I look at these movies, I look at a lot of the reviews, and Roger Ebert sure didn't like it. Yeah, and Regina says, to me, that was the not important. And Helen, please take the mic. Hey, Helen, I thought I saw your hand. So would you like to, if you would like to take the mic, please let me know that. You can type mic or you can, you don't know, need to be sorry. Would you like to take the mic? Yes. Sure. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know what's going on today. Yeah, I found it a bit distracting, to be honest. I kept trying to draw parallels, but it was good because it sort of was allowed me to watch my mental chatter. But at the same time, I actually thought it was really very like poignant and beautiful, you know, this story from 2,500 years ago and how it's so important to to many people today, and that I thought was like really just sort of lovely to see that, that this enduring search of man. So yes and no would be my answer. Thanks.
Sweet, Helen. Thank you. Helen's got such a big heart. Yeah, very, very sweet. Shauna says it was dismissible. Jay thought it was not important. And Regina's pointing out that she thought that that whole myth of Siddhartha's birth was part of the not important part. It was cute, though. But yeah, and you know, in the book, Regina, I know that you've read it. I'm going to tell you what it is. Gosh, it's the Adi Ashanti's book about Jesus, and right now the name of it won't come to me. Golly. Resurrecting Jesus talks about the value of myth, and this movie also, by the way, talks about, has a quote about that. I'm trying to find that. Lama Norbu says, I was just telling Jesse the story of Siddhartha at one point in the movie, and his dad, Dean Conrad, says, that's a beautiful story, a beautiful myth. And Lama Norbu says, it's one way of telling the truth, and children seem to love it. I appreciate that it was distracting. I found it distracting, and I could have lived without having seen that in this movie. But I think the idea of myth being used to convey a larger meaning is transferable to what we're doing here. This is why y'all should come back every time we do this, because we use these myths to you know, even when we know that the stories aren't true, we use them to discover something deeper about ourselves. So, yeah. Thanks, Ron. You caught that, did you? My sales pitch. Yeah. Yeah, so that can help it to resonate with us. Listen, there's two more things. Let me... that I want to talk about before we go. One is, I do not have a movie for next month. I'd love to be able to say that I do. My job description says I'm supposed to say, tell you what to watch. And Jay, that's what I was going to say. What I'd like you guys to do is, what I'd like you guys to do is, I'm going to write that down. Jay suggested The Lost Horizon, so let me write that down before I forget it. I'm going to suggest that you guys send me suggestions, and then we'll pick one, because I absolutely want. Didn't we watch that Stranger Than Fiction, Regina? The movie about the narrator. Yeah. Oh, we haven't? Oh, that's a great one. I thought we watched it. Okay. And I will say that Helen sent me a lovely, lovely list. And I don't know if you heard me say earlier, Helen, that I watched one of the movies off that list, which was a great movie, Cloud Atlas. But, you know, some of these movies... and it was a really good movie and had some really good themes, but some of these movies just don't somehow seem to lend themselves to movie group discussion. So I know you didn't recommend that particular movie. I'm just saying, so there's some discernment that goes into, wow, that was a great movie, which it was, but is this really going to lend itself to a movie group discussion? So even though you guys may... recommend movies that are helpful in terms of myth and discovering the deeper truths about ourselves, they might necessarily not might not necessarily lend themselves to this format. So, I know Jessica. I know Jessica from Hoffmeister's group. Helen says there's a woman on the Facebook page who has a group specific to Awakening Movies, Jessica Rary. I posted her group on the page just in case. Thanks. I'll look for that as well. Yeah, I know Jessica. All right. so we're almost done. I did want to ask the... yeah, the Truman Show's a good one. I can't remember if we watched that or not. I'm going to have to go back through the posts and see. That's a good one. Again, you all feel free to email me as movies come up. And, you know, my email is, let me write it down here. But I'm not an admin, so it's lightinthedream, and that's at yahoo.com. So, feel free to email me. And what we'll leave with tonight is what you'll take away from the movie. So that's the last question on our play sheet for tonight. And there's a couple minutes left if you want to take the mic. If you want to type in the room your answer to that question. Thank you, Ken, for putting that up. My email address, lightinthedream@yahoo.com. And I know I haven't left us a lot of time for this movie, but, you know, it's like Helen was talking about, you know, wanting to go back, and Helen and Regina, of course, wanting to go back and look at these five daughters of Mara. And sometimes the really cool thing about using movies in this way is that they keep coming back. You know, for me, they do, and I assume you all have the same experience. They keep coming back in your mind, like we were talking about with this, the death of the ego scene in Peaceful Warrior or in Revolver. You know, you ain't me. So I just wonder if there's anything like that, if there were a scene in the movie or anything like that. That you feel like will come back and speak to you in later days. I realize there's 1 minute left. Yes, woohoo! Shauna, walk straight through purification, no matter what. Amen, amen. That was a really powerful scene. Yeah, that one has, in fact, been coming back to me. So, I wrote something similar, Shauna. I wrote the character centered in stillness. Yeah, so I'm thinking about the Buddha sitting there in the stillness despite everything that was going on around him. So, I love you guys. I love doing this. I love being with you. And I will get a notice right out about what we will watch for next month and create a play sheet to assist with the discussion. Thank you all for being here, and I'll see you next time.